Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyar, America's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. Hey, we have here an article in the Denver Post about the federal government increasing the funds that public schools get. And the funding of public schools from the federal government had been flat for years. And now there are major increases hitting all over the country. And I want to get to just a couple of the details of that story in a little bit as an illustration of something we've been saying on the air for over 10 years, that when a Republican administration is in power, when you have a Republican president, then spending increases at a faster rate than it does under the Democrats. Now, why is that? Maybe you could figure that out and call in. Maybe you could help us understand why spending increases faster, including deficit spending and the national debt goes up. And typically, taxes increase more so under a Republican president than under a Democrat. Typically. So why would that be? 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. Also, we want to talk about, well, I got here a couple pages out of the Herald Times. This is an Indiana newspaper, and it's not an email article. It's actual newsprint. And two articles, a listener sent this in, two articles on the front page. Wow. The one is about, you know, Indiana University scientists are searching for the secrets of the origins of life. And these descendants of scum think that they'll find it somewhere in Oregon. They think they might find the secrets to the origin of life somewhere in southern Oregon. So we'll get to that story, and we'll figure out if these descendants of scum can figure out how exactly life has originated. That'd be great if we can figure that out. And then we've got, well, a second story on the same front page that's just devastating, and perhaps we'll save it to the end of the show, because I don't want people to get too depressed. But a father who has murdered his little five-month-old son, just absolutely devastating. And on page two, they have the obituaries, and here's this little boy's obituary. Just devastating. You know, we talk about PMS killings, premarital sex killings, and that when women have sex outside of marriage, they dramatically increase the chances that they or their children will become victims of violent crime, dramatically. And in this case, the father murders a five-month-old son. Just devastating. Cheryl and I have, how many boys do we have? I got to count them. Seven. I'm asking the studio audience for help. We have seven boys between us. The youngest is little one-year-old Dominic. The thought of this just fills me with rage toward this father and toward our culture, which tells women it's okay to shack up and sleep around. It's fine. No problem. Well, there is a problem. And aside from all the other problems, it dramatically increases the chances that your kids will be victims of crime when you're not married to the father, when you're having sex outside of wedlock. So, if you don't care about your kids or maybe your future kids, then don't worry about marriage. Don't worry about it. If you don't care about your kids or your future kids or your own self-respect, then you don't have to worry about marriage. All right, so also in Berkeley, California, there is a ballot initiative that's going to be voted on in November about coffee. You know how liberals regulate, well, whatever they can regulate? Well, now in Berkeley, there's a ballot initiative. They want to regulate coffee, requiring cafes to sell only two kinds of coffee. This either coffee that's grown in the shade or coffee that's grown where the growers of the coffee beans get paid way more money per pound, like 600% increase compared to other or typical farmers. So that's the law in Berkeley people will be voting on. Either the farmer has to get a lot of money for his coffee beans, or the coffee has to be grown in the shade. And if this law passes, then you could only buy those kinds of a cup of coffee at a coffee shop in Berkeley, California. How's that for a law? And then finally, an editorial in Human Events on restraining orders and what's wrong with restraining orders in America. So that's a lot for us to cover. 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. All right. Now, let's get started with we've been saying for over a decade on the air that spending goes up faster under Republican presidents than under Democratic presidents. Now, how can that be? Why would that be? Is it true? Maybe someone out there can call in with your suspicions or your analysis of why that might be or why it's not. But I've been saying on the air for 10 years that it's true. So, boy, what a way for somebody to call in and refute the host and just destroy my credibility as a talk show host. Because surely the entire Republican Party would know that spending goes up faster under a Democratic administration than under a Republican administration, because the Republicans, well, they're against spending increases. They're against higher taxes. So, but here we go. This is out of the Denver Post. Colorado has three major school districts. Denver, in size, they're Denver, Colorado Springs, and Aurora. Denver, Colorado Springs, and Aurora. Well, those are our three biggies. Aurora is an eastern suburb of Denver. Okay, and this article in the Denver Post, written by their education writer, Monty Whaley, says that funding for public schools from the federal government has been mostly flat for 5 years. And now, under our brand new federal education law, funding is increasing dramatically for urban schools. Denver, 35% increase. Colorado Springs, 65%. Aurora, 13%. Ouch, the Republicans are getting us. Hey, this is a live commercial break, and I'm here to tell you about listener-supported radio. That's right, listener-supported radio. But I was so thankful for our guest last night helping to describe the financial needs of Bob and Yart Live and that we cannot fund this program ourselves. And my wife Cheryl and I, we live in a nice house, but we're not independently wealthy. And we need your help. If you like the Bible study that goes on here masquerading as discussing the news headlines, if you like that, if you like our approach of teaching people what Jesus says, what the apostles taught, what the law of God reveals, and the way we do it through looking at the headlines, then we can use your help. We can use your help in a couple different ways. You can call us up, 1-888-836-9278. That's 1-888-8-NYART. And you could say, I'd like to make a monthly pledge to help Bob and Yart Live stay on the air in my city, wherever you might be listening to, or on the web. And we know that some people can pledge a lot. Some people can pledge $100 a month, $75. 25. Some people can pledge 200. If you can do that, we, of course, would be thrilled and eternally grateful to you. And of course, and also, of course, we'd be in the battle together fighting against liberalism, which is just anti-God. So we need your help. Or you can order our monthly Bible study. So call us at 1-888-8-NYART. And for those of you listening over the internet at kgov.com, by the way, thanks for tuning in. You'll notice that we've recently we've stopped supporting Real Audio, at least for the time being. We may bring that back, but there are technical and financial difficulties with supporting Real Audio. As you know, the funny thing is, the guy who founded Real, I'm asking my studio audience, anybody know his name? The founder and president of Real, CEO? Rob Glazer. He was my boss at Microsoft. When Microsoft hired me back in the late 80s, he interviewed me, and he was like a machine, Rob Glazer. Someday I'll tell you about the interview. But Real is extraordinarily expensive to support simultaneous live streams. So call us and help us out. Bob and Yurt Live, 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. Now, okay, so funding has gone up dramatically. Funding of what? Since we have a conservative Christian Republican president, funding of what? Programs that warn people against homosexuality? No. Funding of pro-life initiatives? No. Funding of the godless, pro-homosexual, pro-abortion, pro-evolution, pro-socialist public school system. That funding has now gone up. Now, I've got here in this article, in Denver, the federal government has increased funding in Denver 35%. Colorado Springs, 64%. Eesh. Aurora, Colorado, 13%. How about in your state? You think funding has gone up from the federal government now that we have Republicans in the White House? Let me turn back into the story here. What have we got? Let's see, by the education writer, Denver Post. The Title I budget for Denver schools has been relatively flat for at least 5 years. There we go. Going back to 1997. Yep. That'd be 5 years. And now it's shot up. Wow. It shot up 35%. And you know what they got to spend the money on? Well, let me tell you what Colorado Springs is spending it on. Their funding has been just trickling in the recent past. But according to their supervisor of Title I funding, Taylor Young, they said it's gone up now significantly, and they're spending a big chunk of it for staff development. That'd be a waste of money. And they're spending another $150,000 set aside to move students from one school to another. That'd be a waste of money. And basically, she says, they gave us additional dollars. Well, of course they did. There's a Republican in the White House. And spending goes up much faster under Republicans than under Democrats. And typically taxes do, too. Now, believe me, I don't like the Democrats. I despise the Democrats. Hey, I'm the pastor at Denver Bible Church. What the Democratic Party, they don't like Bible churches, as far as I can tell. They don't like that. So, I don't like the Democrats. But I'm honest enough to admit that spending goes up faster under Republicans than Democrats. Why? And for example, Remember when John Kennedy, Democrat, liberal, was elected? Well, some of you weren't around. I had just been born. And he ran campaigning that he was going to slash the income tax rates, the highest rate. I'm asking my studio audience, anybody know what was the highest tax rate in America, the federal tax rate, what the federal government would take on your money? Right now, it's, what, 30-some percent. Well, back in the 50s, it had reached, it started out, what, 1%? They said, it's only 1%. When did the income tax start? That was back in the 30s or 40s. By the late 50s, it had reached 90%. 90%, the top tax bracket. For example, if you made $1 million, the federal government would take $900,000. Then how much would the state government take? Well, depending on what state you lived in. And how much would your local city and county get? And your utility taxes and sales tax and sin tax and inheritance tax, death tax, real estate tax, everything tax, inventory tax. So, you know, no wonder people get demoralized. So Kennedy ran saying that he was going to dramatically cut the tax rates in order to spur the economy so that the federal government would actually take in more money. And who voted against that? Who was it that voted against that? What well-known Republican who was in the Senate Finance Committee or whatever? Bob Dole, Senator Dole. Yeah, Bob Dole voted against it. Dole was one of the Republican presidential candidate a few years back. Dole was one of those huge tax and spend Republicans. Huge! Billions, countless billions of dollars he voted to increase taxes and spending. And just unbelievable. All right. So anyway, I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why spending goes up faster under Republican presidents than under Democratic presidents. Because at least the facade is, well, I've got an instant message here. Let me see if this instant message, well, actually, we got a number of them, at kgovlive@aol.com. Let me see if this gets it. Okay, here we go. This is from somebody in Indianapolis. All right. Spending goes up when Republicans are in charge because there is no opposition to spending increases with the Republicans in charge. Most Republicans know that spending money is a good way to buy votes. When the Democrats are in charge, and he spelled that correctly, when the Democrats are in charge, though, the Republicans become small government conservatives and band together to oppose the Democrats' spending request. That's exactly right. We've got the brightest audience in the country, if perhaps a bit shy. But we've got the brightest audience in the country. When the Democrats are in power and they try to raise taxes or increase spending, the Republicans throw a hissy fit. And no, 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 we're the party of low taxes and low spending. And so the Democrats have a hard time raising taxes and spending. You know, of course, they try it the entire time they're in power, but they have a hard time. When a Republican president is in the White House, all he has to say is, do you think maybe we can increase spending just a little bit? Oh, yeah, let's do it. Yeah, so everybody wants to do it. The Republicans in the House and the Senate, of course, they're going to do it because it's their man in the White House. And the Democrats, they've just been salivating the whole time to raise taxes anyway to get more billions of dollars to the public school system because it's a godless, pro-homosexual, pro-abortion, pro-evolution, socialist, anti-American system where they teach kids to blame America first. So the Democrats just have this natural affinity toward funding the public school system because it just produces these little atheistic, evolutionary, homosexual, pro-abort voters. So, of course, they want to fund it. They want to increase funding. But why does George W. Bush want to increase funding for public schools? Why is he pro-public schools? In fact, why is the Bush family supportive of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting? Bush We got the father and the son. Bush Light is in the office right now. Bush Senior, I remember the day when he signed into law a billion dollars increase in, well, $1 billion for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. That's public TV, public radio. They were beside themselves. They were giddy with all that money. And he was thrilled about doing it. Now, what are they? Are they pro-Republican? NPR? Are they? Fresh Air with Terry Gross? This is NPR, National Public Radio. Are they pro? Are they pro-Republican? I don't think so. Are they pro any conservative Christian values? I don't think so. Are they pro-life? I don't think so. Pro-God? Pro the Bible? Pro-morality? Pro-traditional family values? No. So why wouldn't George Bush Sr. go kicking and screaming, fighting, doing everything he could not to dramatically increase the funding of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting? Why not? Why would he cheerfully, with a smile on his face, give his supposed enemies $1 billion? Just makes me sick. It makes me sick that Christian conservatives are so naive. I mean, would you increase funding by hundreds of millions of dollars to public broadcasting of tax money? Would you give your tax money if you're a conservative Christian? If you're a liberal tuning in, you're dumb. So you might, but you're dumb. But if you're a conservative Christian, would you give that money to public broadcasting? No. All right. Okay. So let me get on with this story now. So that was how spending goes up faster with Republicans than Democrats. Now I want to go to this Indiana newspaper, the Herald Times. This is out of Bloomington, Indiana. You know that blooming town where they got that university there and all the fruits and nuts that go to IU? IU is maybe the homosexual capital of the state of Indiana. But this story has nothing to do with that. This is a team of Indiana University scientists are going to explore extreme conditions in search of the origins of life on Earth. And this story by John Munier, staff writer at the Herald Times, starts out with this. This is the open. Do the secrets of life on Earth remain hidden in a thin film of pond scum? A thin film of pond scum. A thin film of pond scum. Now, if, you know, the liberals, they believe, the godless evolutionary liberals, believe that they are from scum. That's what they believe. They believe that at basically, if you get right down to it, at the very origins, at the center of what it means to be a liberal human being, they believe that they are scum. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to debate a liberal, and sometimes it's hard to disagree with them because sometimes they make some good points, if only by accident, like a broken clock is right twice a day. So we've got liberals who think they're scum, and normally, I do everything I can to argue and debate them, but sometimes you just get too tired. Bob Benyard here in a live commercial break, host of listener-supported radio. That's what we are, listener-supported radio, even on the web. I wonder if we could call ourselves radio on the web. Radio, where did radio get its name from? Who invented radio? Well, I was in a church in Italy, and they had some guy buried inside the church, Marconi. So the Italians say that Marconi invented radio. The Americans, we have our own version of that. But at any rate, you know, in Italy, it's so weird. The Catholic Church, they turn their churches, the big ones, into cemeteries. And they bury people, wealthy people and famous people. They bury them in the church. And it's so weird that you go into a church, a cathedral, a basilica in Italy. You're in a Roman Catholic basilica. And you feel like you're in a cemetery and that there's nothing but death all around. It's like being in a morgue. And we realized going there, friends, Cheryl and I with friends, we realized that it is a morgue. And the reason it feels like death is because it is death. There's no life here. Wow, that's weird. Don't turn your church into a morgue. Not a good idea. But anyway, at least if you want to make your church so that it seems like there's no life in it, you know, the gospel is eternally young and living. The gospel is alive. So you build these big churches and you start burying people in them. It's not going to be a lively church. Let me just go out on a limb and make that prediction. Well, at any rate, radio is because it radiates the signal. Radiates the signal out from an antenna. And it goes out radio waves. They radiate out. And so I don't know. On the internet isn't broadcasting. It's narrowcasting. It's not radiating. It's propagating. Maybe we have to call it propio. Internet propio. KGov internet propio site. No, that doesn't work. Well, hey, whatever you call it, we're on the web with Bob and Yurt Live, not only on the radio in a handful of cities around the country, but we're on the web so that we could reach you where you are and when you're able to tune in. To continue to do that, we need your help. So call us and order something and make a donation, 1-888-8-NYART. Now, I just got a funny instant message here at kgovlive@aol.com. kgovlive@aol.com. I got a funny instant message. And it says, this professor, I guess the IU professor, Carl Bauer, scientist at Indiana University, who's looking for the secrets of the origins of life. Hey, Carl, it's not a secret. He has been invited to our seminar in Indianapolis, Does God Exist, August 24th. Wow. At Grace Church. Wow. What if it's a sellout and he can't get in? If it's a sellout and he can't get in, we're going to have let him in. You know, standing room only. We'll let him sit on the floor right in the front. Carl Bauer. Professor Carl Bauer. Okay, so he's been invited to the seminar. Let's hope he shows up. At any rate, they're seeking out places on Earth. This is why they decided to go to southeastern Oregon. They found a place that looks like a lunar landscape. Well, except that there's water there. And they say it's volcanic rock, and it just really looks extreme. And by seeking out places on Earth where the environment is extreme, Carl Bauer hopes to discover the clues about how life came to be. So they think if they go someplace that looks desolate and they spend 6 months there and spend a few million dollars, that they're going to find out how in the world life evolved from non-life. But let me run something by Carl Bauer. Maybe he could consider this. Hey, Carl, you're going to someplace extreme that looks like it completely lacks any indication of life. And you're going there to see, well, how did life spring up from non-life in the first place? Well, why don't you ask yourself this? What if you went to the place on Earth that was more rich with teeming with life than anywhere else? Whether you went to the most humid rainforest or you went to a pond that really was filled with rich pond scum of living algae. And in the pond, there were 1,000 different species of insects and fish and birds and mammals coming to feed. Just the richest bio-environment you could find on Earth. And then study that and see what new life comes out of that. Because you might go to where there's nothing, and, you know, it's very unlikely you're going to find life come out of it. I mean, I don't think you're going to figure out how it can happen either, because it can happen. But forget about life springing out of, you know, non-organic matter. Why doesn't life spring out of a corpse? Think about it. You got a corpse. The scientists say, well, before there was any life, before there was a single living cell, all these different elements came together and just happened to form, by the most extraordinary coincidence, a chain of acids that became an amino acid. Amino acids formed together in this extraordinarily complex chain, and it created a protein molecule. Really? Protein molecule. Well, and even if that happened, all you'd have is a protein molecule. You'd be about a billion, trillion, quadrillion years away from anything living or from a living cell. And they say, yeah, but it just happened to happen. And then more protein molecules just formed by chance. And then because there were a handful of amino acids and protein molecules, then all of a sudden they started working together in such a way that they clung together and they formed a protective shell that could receive nutrients and expel waste. And they created a string of instructions, which was their DNA, a genetic code that described how it all came together. But even then, it would just die. But then it created some RNA, some replicator nucleic acid that went in and made copies of the DNA and began to reproduce all the different pieces, about 10,000 different pieces. And so then it all just worked. Say, okay, all right, that all happened by chance. Okay. And then you had the first living cell by chance. Okay, which is more complicated than a Boeing 747 jet. Okay, that all happened by chance, coming from nothing organic, from no life. It just happened. Well, what if you have a corpse, just a human corpse? Why don't they go to a morgue and study life emerging out of corpses? Because a corpse already has all the amino acids lined up in the right order. They already have the protein molecules. They already have the DNA and the RNA. In fact, they have a trillion living cells in a single corpse. Well, now the corpse is dead. But it's all there, all assembled. So you'd expect to see some kind of new life popping out of a corpse. The place to go to find new life, to find the evolution of life, is at a cemetery. Because in a cemetery, you have countless quadrillions of atoms, molecules, all arranged in virtually the perfect order to have life. Perfect. There it is. A trillion times over. Oh, there's 50,000 people at Arlington National Cemetery. Well, then you have a trillion cells ready, all the material ready to evolve into life. A trillion cells, 50,000 times over. In the soil, decomposing, you couldn't possibly ask for a richer compost for life to evolve. There it is. Evolution is given the chance to evolve life on a silver platter. Where is it? You don't get life out of a corpse. You don't get life out of a corpse. You don't get life out of a corpse. You got a trillion cells with everything just perfect for life. One cell just has to, it might even have cancer in it, the corpse. That might be why it's a corpse now. And the cancer is doing its own thing. Everything's, all these cells all doing their own thing. And the person dies and no life comes out of the corpse. The evolutionists used to think, oh, yes, look at those ugly, funny, smelly little bugs, worms crawling around. You ever see that in some putrid animal flesh? gross. And they thought, oh, that was life evolving just spontaneously. And it took more clear thinking people to say, no, those worms came from eggs that were deposited by flies, that larvae all or spores that just landed on the rotting fish in the gutter. And that's where those worms came from. But life doesn't even come from dead life. Life comes from God. Life comes from life. And, hey, Carl Bauer, you got a personal invitation to come to the Does God Exist seminar. And at the end of the seminar, if you would like, we talk a lot about science, and I'm just an ignorant pastor of a Bible church, pastor of Denver Bible Church. You could come out, and at the end of the seminar, I'll give you 15 minutes to correct my errors, and then we'll take a half hour and debate, you and I, about whether science provides the evidence, the proof, for the existence of God. That'd be fun. Okay. All right. Now what do we got? Now we got Berkeley, California. Huh, Berkeley. By the way, our phone number, 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. Berkeley, California has a, well, this is sort of funny. This young guy is a recent graduate of Berkeley Law School. And, hey, you know, Christians have figured out one thing. They've figured out that our public school system is godless. I mean the good conservative Christians. And they don't like supporting the godless education system. But they're a little slower on the uptake thinking about the legal system in America. The legal system is also godless. We have a godless legal system in America, right? You know, let me just make a mention here. It's sort of it's funny, I think. I'm usually logged on to AOL during the show. And we get instant messages, and they pop up all over the screen. And some of them I read, and some of them are buried 10 beneath another, and I don't see till after the show. But people instant message, and I say, hello? Is this working? Is there anyone there? Hello? Hello? This is not working. Why have an instant message if no one is responding? And then they go away mad. You don't do that if you're instant messaging a talk show. If you email a talk show, you don't expect to get an instant response or even any response. I'll send a FedEx package with an article in it to a talk show host, and I don't expect, so maybe it costs $15. I don't expect that he's going to read the article. I don't expect it because he's a talk show host and he's busy. And the $15 is almost certainly a waste of money, but there's a chance. So when you instant message, yeah, we're here. We're here and we'll try to see your show. And hey, we're here. We're here. Take a sedative. Don't take a sedative. Hey, commercial break, and it's live. Bob Benyard here, and I'd like to tell you about our Revelation Bible Study albums. We have had wonderful comments from people, and I'll describe one situation with a prosecutor, a county prosecutor, not an assistant prosecutor, but the county prosecutor, who's a Christian. And he's talking to a detective in the county. And the detective says to the prosecutor, hey, what are you doing in your church? The prosecutor says, we're studying the book of Revelation. And the detective says, no, you're not. And the prosecutor is in the hierarchy scheme. The prosecutor is way higher than a detective as far as the government goes. And so The prosecutor looks at him a little weird. He says, what do you mean, no, we're not? We're studying the book of Revelation in our church. We've been studying it for a year. And the detective said, no, you haven't. And the prosecutor got just a little bit annoyed. And he said, what do you mean, no, we haven't? I've been there every week for a year. We're studying the book of Revelation. So the detective, being a good detective, looking for evidence, says, well, then if you've been studying it for a year, tell me, what does it mean? Do you understand the book? And the prosecutor said, being a Christian and a conservative prosecutor, now a liberal prosecutor would have lied, but being a Christian conservative prosecutor, he said, no, I don't understand it. It's really confusing. And so the detective said, well, that's what I mean. You haven't been studying it. Maybe you've been reading it or talking about it, but you haven't been studying it. Why don't you, I'll give you an album, Revelation, seven churches, seven seals, goes through the first part of the book. And go through that album, and then if you'd like to borrow the second album that goes through the rest of the book, Revelation 7 Trumpets, 7 Bowls, I'll lend you that too. And then you'll be studying the book of Revelation. So the detective gave the album that he got from us here at Bob and Art Live to the prosecutor, and the prosecutor listened to the 6 tapes and called up the detective and said, can I get that second album? And he got the second album, but he did not give back the first album. And he listened to both albums through 3 times. That's what? 17 hours or so of Bible study. And now he says, now I get it. All right, this is funny. Now I've got all these instant messages, people saying, hey, is this working? Is anybody there? Hey, what's up? Doesn't this stuff work? Yes, it works. I'm responding in all caps. Now, on the internet, in all caps, that's how you yell at people. You just put your caps lock on. Yes, it works. All right, now, let's get back to this here. So where were we? Oh, so the legal system. The legal system is godless. We have a godless education system. And the only way we could possibly have a godless education system is if we had to have a godless legal system. Because if you didn't have a godless legal system, you couldn't have a godless education system run by the government. You couldn't have that. In fact, there's something else you couldn't have. It's even bigger, but I won't tell you right now. So the legal system is godless. And if you have a Christian who wants to be a lawyer, just warn them. It would be like if you had a Christian who wants to be a public school teacher. Just warn them. It's possible to be a good public school teacher as far as being a Christian and actually have a positive influence, a net positive influence by your time as a public school teacher. It's possible, but it's almost never done. Because most public school teachers who are Christians defend the public school system, they defend the godless education system, and they tend to cover up the wickedness of the godless education system. And then a family, a naive Christian family, sends their kids, innocent little victims, off to the public school system, off for the first day of kindergarten. And then first grade, and then before you know it, they're in 10th grade and having an abortion or trying out bisexuality or beginning to despise the morals of their parents because that's what the godless education system taught them all those years. And peer pressure is really difficult to overcome, really difficult. As a Christian parent, it would be like saying, you know, I want my kids to learn how to overcome temptation, so I'm going to put pornography in their bedroom. And that way they could see what the real world is like and they'll be strong. And I want them to be able to witness to unbelievers, so I'm going to let them hang out with gang members and maybe go to X-rated theaters so that they can – do they still have those anyway? So that they could just maybe get people saved. That would be, of course, absurd, but that's sort of what it's like to send your kids to public school. You send your daughter to public school because you want her to be sexually harassed. That's why you send your daughter to public school. the Christian father who sends his daughter to public school is doing it so that she can be sexually harassed. Because she will be, it's guaranteed, and it will happen so frequently in her young and formative years, throughout her pre-puberty years, into puberty, to young womanhood. It'll happen so many thousands of times that she'll become accustomed to being treated like a tramp. So that's why a Christian father sends his daughter to public school, so that she can be sexually harassed and abused. And most likely seduced eventually by some punk who might give her a disease or make her pregnant and then bring your Christian daughter for an abortion. Why they skip school, but they don't get in trouble because the principal and the school nurse helped them arrange the appointment and kept it a secret from you, the Christian father. But anyway, so we figured out as a Christian community, the conservatives, that the public school system is godless. But we haven't quite realized that the reason it's godless is because the legal system is godless. It's godless. Godless. And so if you know a Christian who wants to be a lawyer, the only way a Christian could actually have a net positive influence with his career as a lawyer is just like a Christian as a public school teacher. If you warn the public, if you warn your community that as a public school teacher, you know firsthand that it is a godless education system and they should get their kids out of the godless education system if they at all can. If you do that, and then while you're in the school, you save whatever kids you can save, then you can have a net positive influence. But if you don't do that, then this naive Christian family that lacks wisdom and maturity is going to say, well, my daughter goes to the local middle school, but, you know, she had a Christian teacher 3 years ago for two classes. But she had a Christian teacher there. In other words, the presence of a Christian teacher in the godless public education system gives families a false sense of security. And they think, well, you know, things aren't too bad at this public school. You know, I know public schools are bad, but the one in our neighborhood is it's actually the best one in the entire region. You know, many parents believe that their kid's school is the best one in the neighborhood, in the region, in the county. You know how many believe that? It's just cracks me up. It's like all these auto dealerships that are the number one Chevrolet dealership in the country. The number one Chevrolet dealership in the country. All right. Let's go to a call here. Hey, this is Bob and you're live. Who's this? Hello? Oh, we're losing. We're losing a call. All right. I'm gonna put you on hold. Maybe it's a shy person who wants to talk to a call screener. I just picked that up. All right. So anyway. Oh, really? And he was shocked that I answered. All right, our call screener said it was a homo. Ah! We get calls here at Bob and Your Life from homos. I'd estimate we've had, let's see, in the last 10 years, homos who call and hang up or curse or, you know, occasionally make death threats, mail us stuff. I'd say, I don't want to exaggerate, over 10,000. Over 10,000 calls in the last 10 years from homosexuals. They seem to be the number one group most fascinated by Bob and Yart Live. Can't quite figure it out. Okay, anyway, the legal system is godless. And if a Christian goes to law school, now we've told our kids that if any of them go to law school, we'll disown them. We've told them that. It doesn't mean you can't go to law school as a Christian and be a Christian lawyer with a positive influence. It's just that it's overwhelmingly unlikely because almost all Christian lawyers, now test your own recollection when I say this, almost all Christian lawyers, and I'm including the big nationally known Christian leaders, those lawyers, almost all Christian lawyers defend the system and even say we have the best system in the world. And they defend the godless legal system that we have in the same way that Christian public school teachers defend the godless education system. And that's wrong. That's wrong. You know, at Denver Bible Church, now and then we have a sermon or a Sunday school where we talk about the Bible is a criminal justice textbook. And we show how the law, God revealed what the criminal law should be. God revealed the principles of governance. And as Christians, the Christian community doesn't even consult God's opinion when they're trying to figure out public policy. If you ask 10 Christian leaders, what should the penalty for perjury be? They maybe will come up with 10 different creative guesses. Then if you ask them, and maybe they have an argument why, they might say, well, you know, God addressed the laws in the Bible. Da, 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 that was the Old Testament. The Old Testament. That was the Old Testament, God, and the New Testament, not the Old Testament. The Old Testament was the intertestament period when God, psychoanalysis, and God got better, and now he doesn't judge, and he doesn't forgive, and all that. So they might find some reason to say that we're no longer bound by what God said in the Old Testament, or it's no longer relevant. They might have some argument to that effect. But couldn't they at least give God the courtesy of knowing what he said in the first place? Because you ask 10 Christian Sunday school teachers, what should the punishment for perjury be? Here's my guess. Out of the 10, you get some answer. And then you ask them, well, what did God say the punishment for perjury should be? And either they will tell you, I don't know, or the death penalty. And the second answer is wrong. God didn't say the penalty for perjury is death. He didn't say that. And I'm not going to tell you what he said. But I'm just illustrating this point that our Christian leaders, as far as principles of governance and law are concerned, they put way more stock into the platform of a political party or to the right in the writings of men or some snapshot of European history than they do in what God has said. And why should that be? I mean, if you're going to dismiss God's opinion on legal matters, if you're going to dismiss it or say it's no longer relevant, don't you at least owe God the courtesy of finding out what he said before you dismiss it? Before you think it's irrelevant. So what did God say about perjury? What is the penalty for perjury according to God? Well, I'll tell you one thing. You're not going to find the answer to that question on this show. Because I'm not going to tell you. What did God say is the penalty, should be the penalty for perjury? What is God's opinion on that? I'm not going to tell you. I'm not going to tell you. You got to figure it out on your own. And if you're a Christian, you want to be a lawyer, you got a lot of learning to do before you're strong enough to set foot in a law school. A lot of learning. If you don't know the principles of governance and criminal justice that God laid down in the Bible, you're going to go into law school and they're going to make mush out of your brains. And you're going to come out a distorted, lukewarm Christian. And you're going to defend our godless education system as the best system in the world. Guess what? God's system is better. Hey, this is Bob Enyart reminding you, don't drink coffee in Berkeley. Do right and risk the consequences.